Hello, friends, and welcome to my reactions to episode 53 with social justice activist, choreographer, and changemaker, Susan Slotnick. This was, I think, my first grandmother on the show. And I am not certain if you guys noticed it, but I certainly did. When it came to the presentation of her ideas, of her thoughts, of her storytelling, there was almost nothing to prove. I felt like she navigated the conversation with a ton of grace. There was no need to impress anyone. There was no need to sell anyone on anything or any service. It was simply, this is what I've done in life. These are the lessons that I've learned. This is what I think I know, and this is what I think I don't know. And I really appreciated that. In a world where everyone is selling and trying to be more and do more and accomplish more, it stood out to me that here was somebody that was really living in gratitude without the need to prove anything whatsoever. Now, this was an episode that I was really looking forward to personally, a conversation that I wanted to have, because I had an experience a couple years back where I visited a maximum security prison for a couple days. It was part of a prison program called Defy Ventures, where successful entrepreneurs were invited to mentor the incarcerated and help them design a business model so that once they got out of prison, they could have a business plan and something that they could look forward to. And part of this program was a Shark Tank piece of the puzzle where these entrepreneurs in training would come out and pitch to a bunch of investors that would then give them up to $10,000 to get their business started the minute they left in order to combat recidivism rates. And I remember entering this experience thinking, oh, I am going to come in and do something good for the community. I am here to support these poor fellows that are locked up inside of this maximum security prison. But when you're actually there, you realize the level of privilege that you have, that these are individuals that were probably just born in the wrong place under the wrong set of conditions with the wrong skin tone. They were people that probably never had the chance, not because of the choices that they made, but because of the circumstances that they were placed in. And I just remember feeling so disoriented as a result of this experience, questioning what success is, who it's accessible to, and why society works the way it does. Anyways, this for me was a one-time experience that I carved out time for, and I didn't remain deeply involved in it. And so when I received this email from Susan asking if she could be on the podcast, I was just so curious to hear what lessons she had learned from having participated in this kind of interaction for such an extended period of time, knowing full well that it wasn't going to be necessarily about what she brought into prison, but also what the prison brought to her. One of the first lessons that she shared was the importance of showing up in service of others when you were in a situation that had an uneven power dynamic. As a tangible example, she was basically talking about how when someone comes into a prison, sometimes they might be there just to make themselves feel good and not be really able to fully show up for others. Within the social impact space, this often manifests itself as either volunteerism or what I like to call heropreneurship. When people are not actually there to make a difference, they're there to make themselves feel like they're making a difference at the expense of the actual communities that they're supposed to be serving. And I guess this is really the kind of life lesson that can be ported to all sorts of different situations, whether it's parenting or leadership within a workspace, where it's important to remember to be outcome focused, to make sure to ask yourself, what am I hoping to accomplish by giving a certain kind of feedback? Or what am I hoping to accomplish by showing up in this way? This isn't to say that you shouldn't practice self-care and that anything you do that makes you feel good is a bad thing, but I think just to acknowledge the reason that you're really there in the first place and to make sure that you have your priorities straight. The other thing that really stood out for me when talking to Susan was the humility with which she showed up to the conversation. And I got to learn that humility can come from a place of gratitude if you realize that everything in life that you do is not the result of how amazing you are as an individual, but rather a byproduct of the support network and the people and the opportunities that manifest themselves as you make your way to making the world a better place. And so while she is proud of the accomplishments that she has made, she knows she can't claim sole credit for it, and that keeps her humble. Maybe an added benefit is that gratitude is also the secret to happiness. At least, that's what every single book I've ever read on mindfulness claims to say, is that when you start noticing all the things in your life that are going well and taking the time to appreciate them, then you end up being a happier person. So really, it's all positive. You get to be more humble, you get to be more happy, and you get to build more friendships. Win, win, win. There's something else that Susan said that really struck me, and it was this line where she goes, "You can't save anyone, it's up to people to save themselves." So in her case, she's introducing dance as a tool for expression, therapy, and humanity within the prison space, but that doesn't mean that the dance program itself is responsible for rehabilitating any single person. And similarly, if someone gets out of prison and then gets sucked back into the prison system for whatever reason, it doesn't necessarily mean that the dance program didn't work either. And that's because she is bringing a tool into this space, but it's up to people to decide whether or not they want to use the tool or how effective the tool is. And not all tools are made the same for the same people, and the tool always has room for improvement. And I think this general metaphor just made me think of the importance of storytelling and getting the whole picture around something. Because if we only heard about the fantastic stories of human transformation that dance could bring into inmates, one could imagine that if only every prison had dance programs, the world's incarceration problems would end. But we all know that isn't true. Does that mean that dance in prison programs isn't valuable? Or at what point does it become valuable enough? How do we measure the impact of the arts? We know it makes some difference. We know it works on some people. Does that have a value? And so this brings me to one of the quotes that Susan says that I thought was tremendously powerful, is that if we remove the arts and the humanities and the education from prisons, then you just have humans in cages. What is the purpose of a prison in the first place? Moving for a moment away from the conversation about prisons into pure dance, one of the things that I've started doing after hearing this podcast was to experiment with the idea of slow movement as if you were swimming in water. So if you remember while listening to the podcast, Susan actually references this at one point in time, which was the benefit of slow intentional movements is very similar to taking a drug like Prozac. It calms you down and it makes you feel grounded, or anyways, it's supposed to have all sorts of healing effects. And when Susan mentions it as a therapy, it sounded a little bit esoteric. However, I wanted to give it a shot nonetheless. And so over the last couple weeks since listening to this podcast, I've taken small moments in my day, whether it's in the morning while stretching or maybe in the middle of the shower at night, just to experiment with this idea of being really present in your body and moving around slowly just to see how it made me feel. And I have to say, it really seems like there's something there. This idea of feeling, I guess, is a form of mindfulness. Now, I'm definitely not an expert at any of this, but if this is something that you decide to try out and it works for you, definitely let me know. And I'm sure Susan would love to hear about it too. One final thought to end on is the point that Susan made about resilience being a heritable quality, and that was something that she felt she was born with a lot of, and that she couldn't claim credit for having gone through so many hard times and still making a life out of all the negative challenges that she's had to face. And the reason that I bring this up is because on one hand, I love that idea of saying, I am just not born with as much resilience or grit as I wish I could have. And then the other half of me, though, is like, wait a minute, if we look at the research of Angela Duckworth, for example, in her book, Grit, she takes the opposite stance and says that grit or resilience is something that can be developed by shifting your mindset. If you are able to become the kind of person that believes that they can change and grow, you become more resilient. If you can find ways to add meaning and purpose into your work, you become more resilient because you put up with more in order to make things happen. You view frustration as a necessary part of the process. Then you can develop more resilience. And so these are just two sort of different ways of looking at the same situation. And I guess it's up to you, the listeners, or me in that case, to pick the one that is best suited for where we are in life and what we are hoping to accomplish. And so with that being said, folks, thank you so much for listening. Hope you have a wonderful week. Stay positive, stay inspired, because impact is everywhere.